Log Talk Radio.
Experience with co-host Dolly Miller Brennan.
Produced by CommunicationCreations.com.
And now your host, the notorious MJH.
Tonight we have once again with us Andrew Castanuella, who's running for Senator of the state of Texas in 2012, Republican Reagan style, that is. And we also have on the line with us our co-host, Dolly Miller Brennan. Dolly, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great now that we're back together. I hope you and Andrew are doing great.
Andrew, yes. Sir, are you there with us?
Yes, Mike, I'm here, and happy Thanksgiving, Dolly. Happy Thanksgiving, Mike, and to all your listeners.
Thank you very much. Happy Thanksgiving to you as well.
Well, there's so much going on today. I noticed today, Andrew, that they said the U.S. was bracing for release of more secret documents from WikiLeaks, and or WikiLeaks, they call them. And it says this time the State Department's on alert. As Julian Assange has said, the organization has access to several hundred thousand the diplomatic cables. What gets me is B.J. Crowley from the State Department said, we're prepared for the worst. And the worst is that this will have an impact on our diplomatic relations with many, many countries. Hello, Charlie. I mean, if you can cut down communications with Joe Blow, you can't cut down communications with WikiLeaks. It's almost as if, are they encouraging this? Do they not care? You know, and this is very serious stuff. And the government just says, well, we're prepared for the worst. We cannot control WikiLeaks. They can control the guy on the street, but they can't control that. What's your opinion, Andrew?
Well, I think it's pretty much in the same lines when you think about it. And if we have the Central Intelligence Agency, supposed to be the cream of the crop of all agencies in the world, and you have other NSA agents and so forth that are intended to protect not only our national borders but also the information and the top secret information that help us, that gives us an advantage in any situation. And if we can't even do that, you know, what is that? It gives you one or two questions that actually kind of comes to your mind. Is one is, was this deliberate, or two, are we incompetent? You know, when you look from a management level and you're trying to train somebody to do something, you say either I give them the tools that they need to have to get it done, and if they still kind of mess up, well, then either it's either on me or it's on them. And if you look at the situation with, like you just described, what's the real answer? Are we deliberately doing this to create some type of unbalanced or disadvantage so that you know, things can kind of play in a certain way, or are we just really having incompetent people working in those positions?
You know, I wonder if it's not even a combination of the two, because, you know, watch the back door while they're taking something in the front. Watch a back door for WikiLeaks. I mean, come on. I mean, this, what's his name, Julian Assange? I mean, he's on trial in Sweden. He's battling allegations of rape, and he says that he had consensual sex with two women, and then they turned on him after they became aware of each other's relationships. I mean, hello, what? I mean, what kind of a person is this? And the United States is saying, oh, well, we can't do anything about it.
And it seems to be the common thread when everything that goes on. I mean, you could have, you know, violence on the borders. You could have North Korea waving their saber. You could have Iran trying to, get a nuclear weapon. You have the Palestinian Authority who, you know, is not really coming to the table to deal with it, you know, the peace talks. But
excuse me, but did you hear about North Korea firing on South Korea?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And North Korea said they tied the attack to the leadership succession, that that's why they attacked them, because they didn't like their leadership succession. Well, I mean, what kind of, that boggles the mind, you know. It's like, is it, and the United States is not doing anything about it. Let me pull this up here.
Well, the president of South Korea said if they attack again, he's going to retaliate, and I forget how he put it, but it sounded pretty badass. He's pretty much going to kick their asses, and being we're allies of South Korea, we might very well get involved.
Well, it says North Korea, that's the latest blow to Obama's nuclear agenda. But and then Debka Files, I love Debka Files, and they came out with some information today. That said, Washington is spurning Tokyo's demand for reprisal against North Korea. So in other words, what the U.S. is saying is, we're not going to do anything to them. We don't care if they did fire on an ally. They condemn the North Korean attack, but they're not doing anything about it. And
well,
the Pentagon spokesman said it was too early to
discuss. Obama strongly condemned the attack, but, I mean, are we going to step in, or are we going to do like we've been doing with Israel and say, yeah, we're your friend, but when you need us, we ain't there? Because that ain't cool. We need to support our allies.
I can condemn the wearing of bikinis, too, but if I go ahead and wear one, I mean, what the hell? You shouldn't be wearing those bikinis.
Well, yeah,
I can
exactly.
Do it.
Exactly. Isn't that what you call, not small talk, but, you know, basically,
all bark and no bark.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
The thing of it is that the U.S. 7th Fleet, its headquarters, it was at Yokosuka in Japan. I mean, we have the 7th Fleet out there, and they've been covering South Korea's massive annual, you know, military exercises. They've got 70,000 troops out there. Hello, and they don't want to do anything about it. I mean, we knew it was coming.
Well,
go ahead, sir.
Well, and I guess I can speak a little bit from experience here. Back in 1992, 93, I'm not sure, I got to do part of that joint exercise with Korea. And which we used to do every year, you know, we'd practice with the North Koreans, kind of prepare them in case, you know, the North Koreans ever, South Koreans, in case the North Koreans ever attacked, you know, then so forth. Well, I'm here in this tent, and you always know which way North Korea is because that's where the missiles are pointed on the flight line. So we were due to get out because the exercise ended, but North Korea started once again rattling their saber. And at that point, they put a stop loss. We were not going to go. We were going to have to stay there because we were not sure whether North Korea was going to come down or not. What's been the common response is we will do a joint training kind of intervention, so to speak, to let them know, hey, look, we're working together with the United States. We're doing these training exercises. Just in case you're thinking about attacking, we're prepared to respond to you. Now, in reality, that looks good, and it kind of takes it gives the impression to the North Koreans that we're going to do something, but at the same time, we have to look at the neighbor to the north of North Korea, which happens to be China. And even if you look at the Korean War, what happened during the Korean War, and how we had when we intervened in the North Korean War, we pushed the North Koreans all the way back to the border of China until China got into it, and then that kind of stabled everything out because we didn't want to go into war with China at the time. So you have a situation.
We don't want to go into war with China now, but.
No, I think Obama wants to combine with China. I really think he does. You know,
we don't want to go to war with China because they have how many people do they have in the army alone? 6 million people or 6 billion or something like that.
I think he wants to combine with China and create this huge capitalistic communistic state. In March, on March 26th, North Korean torpedoes sunk a South Korean cruiser.
Mm-hmm.
They lost 46 seamen. And Japan is saying, you know, that there are no penalties coming, no penalties whatsoever coming out of Washington. And they also said that Obama's lack of response to the Japanese call, despite the presence of 20,000 troops, it devalues the defensive umbrella against North Korea. It doesn't do anything. He's talking, but no one is listening. You can talk and talk and talk, but you have to back up by action.
No, most definitely, and you know, even from the point of that they've been trying to use negotiations, or I should say, what's the word I'm looking for? Trade block. What do you call that? My mind is going.
Sanctions.
I'm sorry.
Embargo, sanctions.
Yeah, sanctions. There you go. it pretty much, or they've been trying to use sanctions and they haven't been effective or haven't even implemented them. I mean, in reality is that if I take a step back and we look at how many big businesses, because, I mean, we outsourced a lot of our jobs in our economy out to the South Koreans as well as to the Asians and the Indians, they're going to be reluctant to have a war on the Korean Peninsula because you're looking at a lot of major businesses, American businesses that are working out of Korea, as well as their exports to the United States that will end up affecting the economy. So somebody once said, if you have the three major components in order to go to war are you have to have business, you have to have top military leaders, and you have to have the top political leaders. If all three of them agree that it's in the interest to go to war, then you go to war. You don't have that right now.
How interesting if we wanted to create an economic collapse that we would allow North Korea to continue to fire on South Korea, collapse U.S. businesses there. Wow, would this play into some hands?
Because then all of a sudden people are going to question, because China's not going to be able just to sit there and not do anything, because it's going to be on the world stage. You know, they're wanting to be a superpower, but yet they're not showing any kind of effort of demonstrating some diplomacy status or diplomacy competency to be able to hold the North Koreans accountable.
The DEPCA file reported today, and I have a lot of respect for DEPCA file. In fact, they're very expensive even just to be able to get their analysis here. And it says U.S. unresponsiveness is already resonating loudly in the Middle East, the Persian Gulf, which is beginning to take it as betokening feeble resolve in dealing with Iran's nuclear weapons aspirations. Oh, and remember, Mike, the legislature in Iran was filing impeachment charges against Ahmadinejad because he was making decisions without involving the legislature, such as Congress, but the Ayatollah disallowed that. I mean, hello, can we file impeachment proceedings against Obama for doing this?
Well, what I'm looking at on the big picture here is how the United States is, I mean, we're acting like France. And I don't like that, okay, because we're turning our backs on our allies right now.
Mm-hmm.
And
there's
several different issues. Of course there is, and we can analyze every single one of them. But the thing is, when Hamas fired on Israel across the Gaza Strip, okay, what did we do? Nothing. We didn't even go as far, and I say we, not us the people, but our president, our representatives, they didn't even go as far as saying they were going to take sides. Okay, and you know now, you know, we have Iran going on, and we have we'll invade Iraq. Okay, I don't know how in depth that goes. You know, we can have Larry Ballard on here. I know Cass knows what he's talking about. You know, we can have the Reverend James Rafe on here. We can have Gazella Mead, but nobody really knows how deep this goes, how far back this goes. Now we don't know for sure, and you know. We had one Bush in presidency, and we started a war with Iraq. Then we had Clinton come in. We had another Bush coming into office, and we got another war going on with Iraq. Okay, so what was the guy's name? The leader of Iraq that we took out. What was his name?
Saddam Hussein.
We executed him. Saddam Hussein. Yeah, I couldn't even think of his name for a moment. Yeah, so Saddam Hussein gets executed, supposedly, because I saw that video on Yahoo. I hate to promote Yahoo because I really don't like that site. But I just happened to be on the Internet when there was no announcement of it. It was just all of a sudden, yeah, here's the video of Saddam Hussein's execution. And it looked like, to me, if you can find this, I defy anybody to find this video out there anywhere. Yeah, now, but you know, I saw it when it first came out, and it looked like a Saturday Night Live skit. You know, a Saturday Night Live skit. You know, SNL. You know, it didn't look real to me. And so, anyway, we can go and invade Iraq because we think they're making bombs or weapons of mass destruction or you know whatever they were supposed to be doing. Even though the UN, the only nation besides, or the only nation who supported us, never mind besides, the only nation besides us who actually thought it was relevant to go in there and invade was Britain. And, you know, that was Tony Blair. And Tony Blair, I remember him coming on, hearing him on the radio, hearing the United States of America, hearing Tony Blair come on telling us what was going on, and not our president, George Bush. And, you know, I don't you know, these conspiracy issues and all this stuff, you know, we've talked about them with Larry Ballard and all that stuff. I don't really believe in conspiracies or, you know, just you know, like this Alex Jones stuff where, yeah, the government's out to get you. And, you know, there's the Illuminati and there's all this stuff you don't know about and it's secret and it goes back for hundreds of years, thousands of years. It might be true, it might not be. But what I want to know is why today, okay, November 24th, 2010, why Iran is threatening to blow up Israel, why the Hamas had they fired on Israel a couple years ago, we didn't do anything about it. Now North Korea is firing into South Korea, and we're not doing anything about that except it's saying, no, that was not nice. We do not approve of that.
I think we may have a president in office that has no respect for the United States, doesn't like the United States, and is extremely anti-Semitic, and who actually favors these kinds of actions and actually wants to take the United States down and have a one-world government so he can be president of the world. Since he's been in office, Cass, you would know about this because you're a military man, 2010 has been the deadliest year in Iraq, and all Obama did was give Bush hell for what he did in Iraq. But since he's been in office, the violence has escalated. And how would you relate to that on a military level, Cass?
Well, I mean, they go hand in hand from the perspective. I guess in some ways you look at the policy still the same. Just the person that to some degree ends up changing in the White House. Because, I mean, when you think about it, that's what people were looking for. Obama said, okay, I'm going to get all the troops out of here by a certain time, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do that, and I'm against this. But then once they get into the White House, and now all of a sudden, oh, I didn't realize all this other stuff was going on, so therefore I'm going to just go ahead and kind of keep it the same. The question you kind of ask yourself is it how come? Which is kind of like what Mike is kind of asking, the same thing. How come now? Well, everything has a motive, and that's the key. What you're trying to find out is what is the motive. Even when you go into, you know, negotiations, you're trying to see what is it that they really, really, really want. You know, why are the North Koreans are now acting up? Why is it that the Iranians are acting up? Why is it the president of the United States not doing anything, or what he said he was going to do or he wasn't going to do? You know, and if we knew that, then you could pretty much have the answer that we need to kind of respond to our public who's wanting the answers.
As President Obama goes, first of all, I'd like to see a birth certificate or something that says he was actually born here and he's qualified to be president of the United States.
Oh, my God, yes. I love
Mike,
the idea that
you didn't believe in conspiracy theories.
Texas and other states.
Well, I'm going to tell you what. When I go to DMV to get a driver's license, I have to give them my Social Security card. I have to give them my birth certificate. I have to bring bills that were mailed by the utility company so that they know that I live here. And this guy, you know, with all the rumors going around, you know, just say there are rumors and they're not true. Okay, everything. Don't you think that they would like want to satisfy the public interest and go, yeah, here's the guy's birth certificate. You know, you
try
didn't
to
even
get
got
married
to show it to us.
Try to get married or divorced without a birth certificate. You can't do it.
Well, exactly. Now, you know, if I as an everyday citizen have to go to, you have to go through the trouble of providing my or my birth certificate to the DMV, we're not even talking about running for president. You know, I mean, why doesn't the president or, you know, when you, Mr. Castanuela, when you went to go on the ballot to be a senator, when you went to sign up for the Republican Party, I'm pretty sure, didn't they ask you for a birth certificate?
Honestly? No.
No, they didn't?
No. Actually, what I did to run to get on the ballot was, one, I submitted a statement of candidacy to the Secretary of the Senate, and then after I submitted my statement of candidacy, of course, you had to identify, you know, who your political committee, what party you're going to run with, if you're going to run on a party, and then who your political committee, your campaign committee is going to be, your campaign treasurer and stuff
but
like that.
But you don't have to be a naturally born citizen to run for political office, such as Arnold Schwarzenegger in California.
Yeah, you got to be an American citizen.
You got to be an American citizen, but you don't have to be naturally born. But for the presidency, you're supposed to be naturally born. But like Mike says, for God's sakes, if you get a driver's license, you have to have it. Go down and file for Social Security. You know, for a Social Security card, you got to have a birth certificate. It just boggles my mind that he doesn't have to. You know, what I wanted to ask you, Andrew, and Mike, get your opinion too, everybody's opinion on this, is federal regulators are now ramping up supervision of some clearinghouses. They want to take a step toward bolstering supervision of certain clearinghouses and giving them access to the Federal Reserve's emergency lending facilities. What's going on with this, Andrea? How dangerous do you think this could be?
Gosh almighty, I hadn't heard that part.
I mean, is the federal government trying to control all financial resources in the United States? It sounds to me like control of all banking.
Well, I think that's a given. I think that's been a given since, you know, we established the bureaucracy of what I continue to call the fourth legislative branch of our government. I think that's always been the given, is to be able to control that, whether it was done in a capitalistic way or whether it was done in a socialistic way or whatever position. The reality comes down to that you're able to have a certain set of people who are going to make these decisions financially for, you know, the economy of the United States, which gets us away from a lot of our fundamental practices that we have. So if the Federal Reserve is considering, you know, doing this, you're talking about, we had all these antitrust laws to eliminate monopolies, yet the federal government can kind of create its own monopoly through its own legislation.
What it wants to do is select, it says, and this is from Reuters, specific clearinghouses, allow them to be able to stash cash in interest-bearing accounts at the Fed's, access the Fed's discount window during a liquidity crunch, and wants to give them perks afforded to commercial banks, and then the Fed will decide which clearinghouses are important. So, you know, it really is a destruction of the banking system as we know
it. It sounds like you get your Federal Reserve, and each one, I think, what do we have, 10 of them throughout the United States?
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like you have a sub-Federal Reserve.
That's what it sounds like, doesn't
you
it?
Just got another layer from a management perspective. You just got this other layer. But you know what? They get to come in through the back door and put their hands in the cookie jar.
Yeah, that's just exactly, it seems to me, like what they're doing. You know, oh, and by the way, on the WikiLeaks, Julian Assange, he's in hiding. Now, why is he in hiding? You know, he's very paranoid. They don't know where he's whereabouts. It almost sounds like, you know, deja vu that he's been set up to do that. Like my ex-boss would have said, he would have said, conspiracy, covert action, what's the difference? You know?
That's very true. They both start with C.
That's the truth. But, Andrea, we noticed that in Texas, Mike and I were talking about it, that Texas, among other states, are trying to, says it could present a problem for Obama in the 2012 election because several states now have taken Texas lead. And they are putting on, they're having a law that says you cannot be a U.S. presidential candidate on their state ballot without showing your original birth certificate.
Well, I support that 110%. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. And actually, you know, going back to what Mike was asking me earlier, I think once they'll probably ask for my birth certificate, they're going to ask for my, you know, my state of residency, and of course they're going to have my voter registration and everything. But the closer I get to the election, that's probably when they want me to produce those things. I know the Secretary of the Senate, I have to produce, you know, a copy of my tax return and my financial statement so they know where I stand financially, so in case, you know, there's any improprieties going on between, you know, campaign financing and all those other things. But, no, I support that 110%. I actually also support voter ID, to be honest with you, which basically means, you know, when you come to vote, and it's very interesting because when I went and voted, I'll show them as my voter registration card. And, of course, they look into their master roster and say, okay, boom, 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 all right, here. How do you know that's me? You know? You know, there's no picture on my voter registration card.
Yeah.
So how about if I have my driver's license and bring it in along with my voter registration card and say, hey, look, boom, here, this is who I am. I am a legal resident and I can vote.
Well, this is what we need to do. And
ask for your ID here in Virginia. You have to you show them your ID and your voter registration card.
Hmm.
But they don't ask for that in Texas?
No. You take one or the other. You can show your driver's license, and they'll look it up on their master roster, or you can just show them your voter registration card. And that's one of the bills that they've been trying to pass throughout Texas legislation, is to get the voter ID. And there's a big battle right now going on, actually, believe it or not, because Texas gained so many seats on the Texas legislature, Republican. But the Speaker of the House right now for our legislature is, let's just say there's a significant battle going on whether they really want him or not to be on the Speaker of the House for this coming session.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, there's a it's really deep.
Texas is kind of, not just because I'm a Texan, but Texans it really does take a lead in a lot of states do follow Texas' lead.
Well, I think I read something a while back where Texas, believe it or not, has always had a significant influence on Washington because we've always had some legislatures in. And some positions that impact, you know, a lot of Washington legislation. But it's starting to see a lot of that diminish recently. Now, whether that goes up or not, I'm not sure.
Well, see, plus you guys geographically take up about a quarter of the United States by yourselves.
And let me tell you, when I was driving...
There are only two kinds of people in this world, those that are Texans and those that wish they were.
When I went to go pick up my daughter...
Which are the queers and which are the steers?
Pardon me? What'd you say?
That's Oklahoma, right?
Yeah. Now, here's something I wanted to ask you, Cass, and Mike, see what you think, too. Clinton and Obama, Shiva out of Israel, has been saying that Clinton and Obama pulled the bait and switch on Netanyahu because U.S. guarantees of Israel's security are worthless because as Israel waits for a letter clarifying Americans' guarantees in exchange for proposed building bans, Secretary of Hillary Clinton misled Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu because she said, well, she promised it, but Obama didn't agree to it. So, I mean, I can't believe that that wasn't done deliberately.
Well, at the same time, what is it we gave him? I think is, if I'm correct, $200 million of aid to the Palestinian Authority to assist them with their whatever it may be. Did you hear about that?
Yes, I did. You know, and this comes down to Israeli sovereignty. And a senior diplomat with inside knowledge, you know, of Netanyahu's recent meetings in Washington said Clinton, I can't stand her, she made commitments when talking to Netanyahu, but later slipped out of them. She made the commitments to Netanyahu, but after Bibi was gone, she said, well, she had not been speaking on behalf of U.S. President Obama, who in the end did not give his approval. Then shove her ass out of there. You know, if this is a Secretary of State that does not have the approval of the U.S. President, then you need to get rid of her. So what it's coming down to is she does have approval of the President. They worked together to pull the bait and switch. I'll never believe they didn't. And as far as Bill Clinton, I used to like him. Now he's getting kind of nasty. But if I was a man and married to Hillary, I think I'd be looking too.
Let me correct myself from earlier. It was Hillary Clinton, Secretary of State, who said that she strongly condoned contested Korean thing there. It wasn't Obama.
No, what this is the bait and switch in Israel. She had given guarantees to Netanyahu, and then after Netanyahu had left, she said, "Well, she had not really been speaking on behalf of President Mr. Obama." But she said this is what she wanted to do, but in the end he didn't give his approval, so the commitments she gave weren't for the purpose of her
Yeah, I know that was unrelated to what I said, because earlier I made a statement that our president said that they were against North Korea firing on South Korea, and that was separate. Reminded me it was Hillary Clinton who said that, the Secretary of State. But what you're saying now is she wasn't speaking on Obama's behalf. Hang on. Aren't they all supposed to be speaking on our behalf?
I can't believe that the U.S. Secretary of State is going around making commitments to foreign governments with no authority.
She's got a lot of authority.
Yeah.
She's Secretary of State.
She's trying to say is I didn't have the authority to do it. She was trying to get out of it by saying that.
Well, that's interesting if you say something like that. I mean, even from let's just look at it from a management perspective, going back to management from that. If the President of the United States does not empower her to speak on his behalf to look out for the interests of the United States, then I have to ask the same question to Dyson. So what the heck are you doing here then? Because if
Mike says too, you know, they should be speaking on the behalf of the American people, mm-hmm. because what are you saying is what Korea or Israel, if you guarantee the security of South Korea and the security of Israel, it really comes back to guaranteeing the security of the American people here. So Mike made a good point there.
Well, plus, I don't want to be like France. I don't want to be like, when we need you, everybody step in and back us up. But when you need us, hey, sorry, we got bread to bake, you know.
Well, even the Democrats in Congress were saying they're getting no direction from the White House. They said even though they didn't like Rahm Emanuel, when he was there, he'd come in and tell them what was going on. Now they're asking for direction, and the White House doesn't respond even to their own Democrat. This party eats itself.
Well, this is absence of leadership. There's really no true leader, to be honest with you, because if you're – and I have to question those congressmen who are asking for direction, because – they did not get elected to ask for direction from the President of the United States. They got elected to ask direction from the constituents in their districts.
That's a good point.
Hey, Cass, just completely off the cuff, would you consider, like, if you got nominated, would you consider running for president? Would you go that far with this?
I can't fathom that right now. To be honest with you, I would question. You said I was talking to Dolly earlier, saying, "Gosh Almighty, you know, there is so much." And I will just say the word evil going on in the United States right now, that it can kind of almost make you nauseated. Especially when you get it from the political arena and you see all these backward kind of corruption that goes on within the process of the machine, so to speak, it really nauseates you. And you got to remind yourself that this is why I joined the race. You know, this is not who we are as Americans. This is not what our government is supposed to represent. So the battle is in the Senate, because you know I as nauseated as it feels, I just gotta have faith. I gotta have faith that God. This is what God wants. This is what God's intentions are.
All right.
Now the Sputnik swarm knocked out Iran's air defense exercise again. And Mike is very technically expert in all of these areas. I am not. He is. But if someone has the ability to knock out Iran's air defense exercise, what could happen to us also with this? Do we have any safeguards in place? This is why we need people in the Senate and in Congress that are going to say we need to put these safeguards in place to ensure the stability and security and defense of the United States.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to the SALT treaties, okay? You know, Obama's wanting to, you know, make this new SALT arrangements. And, you know, I am a proponent of it would be nice to be in a world where we don't have nuclear weapons. I'm not going to, because knowing that the whole world will get wasted, I mean, you know, we could nuke the heck out of China, and no matter how many billions of people they had, you know, we could eliminate them, you know. But that's not the answer, realistically. But at the same time, but I'm prepared to do that if I have to do that. And that's why, I support the fact that we need to maintain our nuclear proliferation or maintain our nuclear weapons as it always has been, and as a deterrent.
Saying is that the United States should not let down its defenses completely. Is that what you're saying?
What?
We don't want to do it, but we want to be prepared to do it if we have to.
And only if it's going to be to our advantage, if we have something in place to kind of make that happen. For instance, if we developed our massive weapon, and I think we're trying to work on this, whether it's true or not, I don't know, and that has to do with the electromagnetic impulse kind of thing that we're working on, and that is you can fire something in the sky, okay? And if we're able to develop this weapon that shoots EMT force out there and knocks down the weapon out of the sky, hey, that's great. Guess what? You can fire all the missiles you want once you're in the sky. I got to just shoot my electromagnetic waves, microwaves, and it knocks it out. And it doesn't even explode on top of that.
So are you saying
nuclear weapons, the heads of a nuclear weapon, they're designed to explode on impact. So if you shoot it down in the air, they won't explode. But you see, that sounds like Star Wars. You know, you should know about that, Mr. Castanuello, you know, Reagan's Star Wars. But I actually believe, well, the Star Wars project, I should say. Everybody thinks of the movie. But, yeah, I mean, we actually have the capabilities of shooting down long-range missiles.
Well, and I mean, there's two ways that they kind of, you know, with Ronald Reagan doing the Star Wars program. And of course, we're talking about space and we're talking about lasers. And of course, the most recent was under President Bush was in having the interballistic missiles that kind of intercept. But supposedly, and this is, you know, I was reading an article as well. Everybody knows Senator Ted Stevens, who is no longer a senator. Actually, he's no longer around with us, unfortunately. But, you know, his plane went down in Alaska. Okay. Did y'all hear about that a little while back? And his plane crashed?
Yep.
Well, supposedly his son, who was a major in the Air National Guard, was also a plane went down at the same time. And Senator Ted Stevens, and this is going back to, I'm going to put it out there for my conspiracy, was
conspiracy covert action.
It was covert, okay. Was that Senator Ted Stevens was looking into that and pulling some of his old allies and some of his finance buddies, and they had came down to Stevens to find out exactly what was going on, and supposedly that we had developed this new weapon, supposedly can able to knock down these planes out of the sky because we shoot this electromagnetic wave. And they say, okay, sounds like, you know, Star Wars kind of thing. But all of a sudden, the Russians come online and say, you know what? At the same time that his plane went down, we picked something up on our radar system that shot an EMT pulse throughout, that portion of Alaska, and we're trying to figure out what it was.
Well,
so in one half...
Like when Obama wanted to go into a nuclear defense, a nuclear pact with Russia, eliminating all nuclear weapons, you're saying we really shouldn't eliminate them? We don't want to use them, but we need to have them for defense just in case we need them?
Always, always use it. And I,
you don't unload your gun and throw away the bullets.
You know, it's like that old saying, I'm going to go start a gunfight with a knife. Okay.
Yeah,
exactly.
And it's like with these third world and small world countries, you know, developing nuclear arms themselves right now.
Mm-hmm.
The Cold War, that was one thing, but you know, we need to have all the we need to maintain our arsenal. I don't know how else to put it without going into detail, mm-hmm. but we need to maintain our arsenal just in case. We
so
need to let the world
that.
Know it's there. Okay, we're not going to use it. That's the last thing we want to do. But, hey, you know.
If it comes down to it, it comes down. And you know what would be the move of all moves? You know what? I'd go put a few nuclear missiles stationed in South Korea. And if that don't get their attention, then they got an idea to think about. Because now you have the Chinese who are scared. Because we know we can reach the Chinese. And you have the North Koreans.
So what we're saying here is that Obama is not defending the United States by calling for the elimination of nuclear missiles. He's simply not defending us by trying to say we're not going to use them, not going to station them in places. So I really see Obama as a threat to national security.
Well, Obama is a threat to national security. I don't know what to say about Obama. I'm tired of talking about the guy. I wish he would just go away. You know, he's not doing anything to benefit
exactly.
this country.
He's not doing anything.
I mean, I'm glad he gets up on TV every day and on the internet and makes these feel good speeches so everybody can go, yay, our kids can get an education and you know, all this stuff. That's the good part of Obama. But everything he does is in the guise of the children and the guise of the poor or the middle class, as he puts it. Everything's in the guise of something with this guy. Okay, when it comes right down to it, we have enemy countries firing missiles and doing whatever they want to do to our allies, and we're not standing up for our allies. We're the superpower of the world, or at least we're supposed to be. We are, actually. But our representative is not portraying us that way. He's going, oh, I'm sorry for this and I'm sorry for that. Hey, look, maybe we did make mistakes in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but we didn't elect you as an apologizer. We elected you as our representative. Go do your job, sir, please.
Yep.
You know, gentlemen, I hate to leave you, but I'm going to have to because I do have editing work that I do every night. So I'm going to have to go. I've enjoyed it immensely. And, Cass, I understand you're going to be switching, starting next week, you're going to be switching to Thursdays. Is that correct?
Yeah. Wednesdays I got tasked to go to another county that I'm covering, so I won't be able to make it back in time to call in.
Okay. So then we'll see you next Thursday?
Yeah, that'll work.
And if you're available on Friday, give us a ring.
Okay, yeah, I'd like to call in. I'd like to, you know, like you said, listen to the individuals on Friday.
Yeah.
The conspiracialists.
Well,
there's a hidden agenda.
I'm going to leave you with the same.
Politics. You guys are
I'm going
evil.
To leave you with the same tender words I leave you with every night. Mike, don't stick any drugs up your butt. And I'll see you on
the white card. Stuff wasn't mine.
Oh, that's right. That wasn't yours. Okay. I'll see y'all later.
Okay,
I did get your point a minute ago about nuclear weapons and stuff like that. Like, if we maintain our nuclear weapons while we're asking other countries and stopping other countries from producing them, are we hypocrites? I think this is what you're getting at, and no, we're not. We can do
no,
that
I don't
because
think we are
we're the good guy.
No. I see Obama as saying that he wants all nuclear weapons gone. He wants to leave us defenseless. I do not believe he's a representative of the American people. I do not believe
and it's the
he
same way he
country.
Wants to disarm us as far as small arms, you know, mm-hmm. the right to bear arms and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Nah, we're going to keep our nuclear weapons. We're going to keep our guns.
And as far as apologies,
we're responsible.
And as far as apologies, I've seen those photos in that video of him when he bent over to kiss the hand of an Arab sheikh. He wants to apologize. Please apologize for that butt. On a man, that's ridiculous. Okay. As my daddy said, drive a team and wagon past it and never see daylight. I'll see y'all next Thursday.
All right, take care, Dolly.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, everybody, that was Dolly Madison Miller Brennan, otherwise known as Don't Stick Drugs Up Your Butt Brennan. She's awesome, dude. I love her.
Yeah. She does come straight out and speak, doesn't she?
She really does. She really does, man. I mean, she's the most excellent interviewer. I mean, like, I'm surprised she hasn't been offered a job at Fox News yet just from doing the show. If anybody hears her, they're going to snatch her up, and I'll be missing a co-host. But, yeah, she does an excellent job.
Yeah, but she'd be promoting your program at the same time nationally.
Nah, they wouldn't let her do that. Nah, they wouldn't. Hmm. Yeah, they'd be like, well, now we're Fox News. You can't mention, you know, other broadcasts. You know.
Hmm.
And, you know, that's not a conspiracy thing. That's just business. Be a conflict of interest.
Hmm.
But, Dolly did inform me that you're in a different county now. I don't know what she meant by that.
Yeah, on Wednesdays, I go cover another county. We're trying to work with getting some youth more involved. You know, stop pretty much counseling and get them off drugs in a nutshell.
Cool.
So, yes, sir.
That's a good thing. So, okay, you know, we'll look forward to you on Thursday instead of Wednesday now. And I was going to ask you about something else, and I forgot what it was. Yeah, it was important, probably, because it pertained to you. But normally I'd just say, well, it wasn't important. But
okay.
Hey, but if there, we've got time left in the broadcast because, we had some, like, technical difficulties earlier, so we started at 7:30 instead of 7. So, yeah, you've still got some time if you want to use it.
Well, you know, if you had anything you wanted to talk about or anything like that, we can do that. I mean, we had some pretty good topics, you know, and it's I guess it's a fine line when you're looking at it from a, you know, foreign policy perspective. And this is the one thing I guess you got to take a step back as civilians or citizens in the United States. We read a lot, we hear a lot, we got a lot of information coming to us from a lot of different directions. And then when you're really in that foreign policy perspective, where you're sitting there, you have to take a lot of things in consideration. When we're making those decisions, but there's some that are, you know, just going to pretty much be pretty cut and dry, such as the SALT program, you know, the SALT treaties. You know, why do we take them out of Croatia? Is it Croatia? Is it we took those missiles out of earlier this year? I forgot who it was.
I think it was Croatia, because I know somebody from Croatia. I'd have definitely heard some shit about that.
It was Poland one for sure, and I think I don't know who the other one was, but you know, there were the Eastern Bloc countries, and they became part of us. And then of course we pulled the weapons out because we didn't want to piss off the Russians. And you know, okay, whatever. And then you look at the North Korean situation, and you know, you can look at it from a military perspective. It's a pretty cut and dry case. You know, you attack me, okay, boom, no problem. I attack you. I have a right to defend myself. But then you look at it from the economic perspective and say, oh, okay, what's going to happen here? And you look at it from the political perspective, okay, now you got the Japanese involved, you're going to have the Indians, you're going to have the Pakistanis, you're going to have the Chinese, you're going to have, you know, all these other countries that are right there within that theater are going to be concerned of what's going on if war breaks out in this area. And then, of course, you have to look at the fact, can we even sustain ourselves to get into a conflict on the other part of the world? And then you're looking at the Secretary of Defense at the same time and saying, but you know what? I want to cut our military anyway. I want to lay off a whole bunch of people. I want to go to a smaller military. And you're saying, okay, so how are we going to be able to do all these things when these things come up?
Well, because they're relying on technology as far as, you know, like foot soldiers and stuff like that. They're trying to cut back on that and rely on technology. But, you know, I still think, you know, we need ground troops still.
Always need ground troops, because you can go build a heck of everything you want, but you still got to walk in there and clean it up. It's kind of like that old, I hate to use this analogy, but if you look at the Independence Day with the Will Smith, the movie, and the aliens just came in and said, okay, we blew everything up. Did they just leave? No, they started the ground attack, you know. So, you know, you can have the greatest technology in the world, but it's still, the technology is only as good as the people who enforce it, and you're going to need those people on the ground that are going to be able to do that. I don't know. It's just kind of interesting. I know we send our battleship George Washington, or the carrier George Washington out of Japan out to South Korea to kind of let them know, hey, look, you know, we're interested in this area. Okay. Well, so we got American troops there too.
Well, you know, it's just the way it looks like to me. Okay. Well, first of all, let me put it this way. Anybody can look at CNN or Fox News or listen to Blog Talk Radio or look at YouTube or, you know, whatever they read, wherever they get their news. And everybody can sit back in a little desk chair or armchair and play armchair politician, just like you play armchair quarterback. You know, why didn't that guy throw the pass to the other dude, you know? You know, it's very easy to do that. And it's like my grandmother used to say, don't ever judge a man until you walk 10 miles in his moccasins. So I'm not just out to criticize and condemn politicians who aren't doing their jobs. And I use politician, but what I mean is people in place of government who have certain jobs that they're supposed to perform. And the president is the highest one. And, you know, when I'm looking at this, I just don't feel like, you know, how can I put it? As far as a superpower, we're not bullies. We've never been bullies. You know, we've been accused of sticking our nose where it don't belong, Vietnam and stuff like that. Sure, you know, but that's a matter of opinion. There was a reason for us to be there. There was a reason for us to be in Iraq. I'm just not clear on the reason, you know. But
and I think if we knew the reason, if we'd end up saying, well, that still wasn't a good enough reason. I mean, you could look at Vietnam, for instance, right? We want to say it was for communism, right? Well, how about if it was for the Bell helicopter? It was developed out of Dallas, Texas, which at that time, if I believe, President Johnson had a specific interest to see how that new equipment was going to work out, which kind of goes back to the movie We Were Soldiers, where they introduced the helicopter in the Vietnam War.
So we started a war just so we could operate our new helicopter. See, that sounds like conspiracy. Hey, we got some new shit.
I'll tell you right now, and I'll even say this from this perspective: is being in the military. What I've always found is that the military appears always is used as a guinea pig to see how things work. Okay. And actually, I was even reading this on Drucker, one of the guys that talks about management. And he said, you know, our oldest form of management, when we look at any organizational structure, has always been the military. It defined a lot of organizations, business organizations, how initially established their structure to function in the business world. But, of course, over time, especially over the Industrial Revolution and most recently, we've walked away from that and gone to different types of organizational structure. But the military has always been somewhat, I call it, guinea pig. I mean, we were the first ones to get, you know, to some great degree, government health care run by an HMO, which is TRICARE. And people have said that's First Lady Clinton's health care proposal didn't get passed through the Congress back when President Clinton was the President of the United States. give it to the military. Why? Because we got control over them. I'm president. I can do whatever I want with them. I can tell them whatever I want with them. And sure enough, we also create a lot of weapons and a lot of technology that, you know, you really can't use. You can test it all you want, but you really can't understand how it's going to function in a real-world situation unless you're in a real-world situation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, just kind of how it goes. You know, you can make a weapon to go deer hunting. So, wow, this is probably the best deer rifle ever had. Well, you're going to have to go shoot a deer with it in order to make sure it works.
But does it work on a turkey?
There you go. And then you say, well, you know what? I want a deer rifle that works on a turkey and a deer. But I got to go test it again. So.
See, that's kind of metaphoric and everything like that, because it's Thanksgiving. You know, you mentioned deer hunting. I drew it to Thanksgiving. But seriously, you know, like, okay, we've got nuclear weapons, okay, that, you know, well, we know what they're capable of doing. But mm-hmm. What if you have a smaller problem? Do we really need a nuke? No, we don't.
No, well, here's the other part of it that, you know, has been controversial, so to speak, and that was if we had spent more technology and more time, and I think I read this somewhere else as well, is that we could have gotten to the point to where we got our nuclear arsenal to where we could only have a certain amount of detonation over a certain amount of geographical location versus having to blow up the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would have probably been, you know, more sufficient. You know, if I could create a nuclear weapon with the capability of wiping out, you know, 2 square miles, you know, versus having to wipe out, you know, 250 square miles.
Well, even if you could pinpoint it to just wiping out a radio tower,
mm-hmm.
you still got to worry about fallout and stuff like that.
And that's always going to be one of the downfalls.
Right.
But it goes back to, what is it called, utilitarian philosophy, where you weigh the good of one or the actions out of the good of one to see whether it's good overall moralistically, you know?
Well, see, that's why you buy a gun, not to use it. But if you ever pick up that gun, don't just point a gun at somebody. If you pull the gun, you pull it for one reason, and that's to shoot. And you only shoot for one reason, and that's to kill.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't buy a gun going, I can't wait to kill somebody. Where's my next target? Where's my mm-hmm. first target? Okay? So us, America, when I say us in this sentence, I mean Americans,
mm-hmm.
America, okay?
Mm-hmm.
When we have nuclear weapons, we've used them twice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, basically, you know, it was once, but we used two of them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we learned from that, and we will never use them again unless we absolutely freaking have to. But the fact that we have them, okay, we proved over the past, it's been, what, 40, 50 years?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, something like that. I could do the math, but, you know, I'm just shooting mm-hmm. off the cuff here. So in the past 40, 50, 60 years, we proved that, okay, we're not going to do that again. That was too much. But we still have those, you know. So if you make those and you try to fire them at us, well, first of all, I know we're on the radio and stuff like that, and people can hear us. But look, if somebody shoots a long range missile at us, we can shoot those down with an airplane. Okay, we don't need Star Wars and all that. If they shoot a bunch of them, yeah, we need something stronger, you know, more of them. But we can shoot those down with a jet. Okay, but if you shoot those at us, well, the only thing stopping people shooting those at us is they know we'll shoot them back.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well, that's always been the number one deterrent. But there's going to get a point to where they know that you're not going to use them, so they can go ahead and do everything else knowing the fact that you're not going to use them. For instance, let's take a rogue state, for instance. You know, if they know they don't have nuclear weapons, but they can do whatever they want and whoever they want, you know, knowing that you're not going to nuke them, and you can't invade him, because if you invade us, then by God, then that's an act of war, and the whole world's going to go against you. You know, that comes into the political domain of a political movement. You know, they're going to push their limits. They're going to end up pushing that envelope a little bit more until, you know, you're going to end up having to do one or the other. And I guess that's where I'm trying to look at from this perspective is, okay, I know I'm not going to fire my ICBM that's going to wipe out 250 square miles, okay. But guess what? I do have something else in my pocket, and I can use this, and it can blow the heck out of your little town. Do you still want to play ball with me? You know?
So, I mean, well, what we used in recent history is airstrikes, and that seems to be the most effective with the minimalist casualties.
Yeah, and then until they advance the technology to shoot down our missiles. And I think that's one of the things we're looking at. The Chinese and the Russians they're starting to go to the point to or advance the technology to where our airstrikes, I'm trying to think of the missiles that we shoot off of the submarines and off the battleships, cruise missiles,
guidance missiles,
yeah, the cruise missiles.
Cruise missiles, yeah.
Yeah, you know, they get to the point they say, you know what, we can start shooting these things down where it doesn't matter anymore. You know, whether you have that technological advantage, because while you've been cutting your budget, you've been cutting your R&D in this area, we have been investing in it. Now we're technologically equal as you. And that's something that we really need to take a look at from the national defense perspective, is are we getting to the point, or are our competitors getting to the point where they're technologically equal with us on a defense perspective? And if that does, then what do you have left?
Well, as far as a superpower, I don't know. I mean, I think the biggest thing we have to our advantage is responsibility, you know, because we don't only take care of ourselves, you know. We're not only responsible for ourselves, we try to be responsible for the whole world and do good. You know, we don't go into other countries and invade them to take over those countries. We go into other countries and we don't really invade them. We just try to help the people who live there. You know, I mean, if we were like out there trying to take over the world or something, that would be wrong. But we're not doing that. We're trying to help.
Well, to some great degree, and I'd end up saying there's two things. One is you're right, and in the sense that that's where we used to be. We used to be where the people would look for us for that guiding leadership, that moralistic leadership of, you know, how to treat human beings in this world and then protect the weak and you know, do all the right things. At the same time, though, we've also had what we'll call neocolonialism, and that is where we end up. We may not have done it there and invaded the country, but we sure as heck did want to invade their resources. And whether that resources because of, you know, whatever you had from a natural resource, or that resource happened to be from a human perspective resource, or humanistic resource, or even if you had that from, you know, a financial resource, you know, you had a lot of money or something, you know, we still come back to the basis of the United States being a capitalistic state.
Well, okay, just to go with that, because I know what you just said, I know what that reminds me of, and I know people listening are thinking, yeah, well, we invaded Iraq for the oil. But doesn't the United States have, we don't drill for oil that much anymore, but, you know, don't we have the resources ourselves? We don't need to go into a foreign country and, you know, take them over for oil.
What,
do
yeah,
we? I mean, do we have any reason to do that?
We do. Well, there's two things, and this is more of a conversation that we're having, but two things. One is we do have the resources available. Why aren't we doing it? Now, it can be one of two reasons. Okay, one is because either we're trying to conserve our resources in case of a time of need, so that we'll be able to go ahead and utilize them, or two, we can't get to them because of bureaucracies that kind of limit us from doing that. And I don't know which one is true, to be honest with you. I think they're kind of both true to some degree. More or less, the bureaucracies are in place because of, you know, they go in and the regulations that have to do with, you know, giving you, take for instance, a moratorium of offshore drilling. You know, even though it's been lifted, okay, there have not been new permits or new licenses authorized to go ahead and drill for more oil. So,
excuse me. We're about to cut off.
Okay. All right. Well.
Yeah, you can finish what you were saying. I just want you to know I didn't hang up on you or anything.
No, that's okay.
We're about out of time.
But yeah, that's basically what you get into. And I'd prefer to use our resources because, you know, we get a better price from them. but no, yeah, you're right. There's so much that's going on right now, Mike, that I guess it just kind of throws me away and says, okay, well, what the heck?
I guess we'll see you next Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central, and we can continue this conversation discussing.
Sounds great, Mike. Let me
thank you very much, Mr. Casanuela. Peace, God bless you, and happy Thanksgiving to you.
Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.